Jordan Gershowitz is a head writer. He doesn't look old enough to be a head writer, but he is, and he's very, very good at what he does. And he's also a mensch. What's a mensch? It's a Yiddish word. According to the dictionary, a person of integrity and honor. And I think the reason Jordan Gershowitz is a mensch is because you can tell he cares deeply for his staff writers and for all the people that he works with in the United States and abroad. And we have a lot to look forward to. Jordan Gershowitz has a couple shows coming out, one for Disney Channel and one for Nickelodeon. He's also worked with HBO Max, Warner Brothers, and DreamWorks. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Jordan Gershowitz as much as I enjoyed having it.
Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company Morzap Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Jordan Gershowitz.
Very nice. Well, you know, Gershowitz and Zeitlin, we have to be careful to have our names pronounced correctly, you know?
Absolutely.
So congratulations. I've been keeping up with all of your successes and your posts on LinkedIn, and much applause.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. And thanks for reaching out.
I'm so excited to connect with you. So I have had heads of programming. I've had heads of state. I've had technologists and artists and authors, and I haven't yet had a head writer at Nickelodeon.
Oh, so I was going to say, after all that, it sounds like you're all scraping the bottom of the barrel here, if you're getting me.
So tell me a little about yourself. Here's what I'd like to know, Jordan. So Passion to Power is a podcast for those that are aspiring for their careers in creative endeavors. It's also for those people in my set who might be making some major shifts. And during the pandemic, we've seen a lot of seismic shifts. So I would love for you to speak to your career, but in a way that might frame it for these two listening pods. How you started, what got you excited about working in the 6 to 11 age demographic, and what keeps you up at night?
Got it. A lot of things keep me up at night. Yes, I mean, for me, I always wanted to be a writer. I knew that that was something that I was really passionate about. The kid space in general has always been something that I've really enjoyed. My dad has worked in the toy industry for his entire career on the product side. So sales for Mattel and Hasbro and Tyco, and really working with a large number of popular brands back, I mean, stretching back to the 70s. At one point, they even made a G.I. Joe modeled after him in the
80s. Yeah, but you weren't even born yet in the 70s, were you?
No, I was not. But I'm just saying, it was something that for me growing up, it was always around going to toy fair, seeing, you know, the new product lines that were out, loving the Ninja Turtles, you know, and being upset when you realize as like an 8-year-old that going to toy fair does not mean that it's like a shopping spree, and getting free samples of things. You have to you have to wait, you know, a year before they come out. So my mom's also a teacher, and so, or was, she retired last year before the pandemic, and so I think between the two of them, you know, kids television was just something that I gravitated towards. My brother is also 5.5 years younger than me. So growing up, oftentimes we would watch TV. And so I was still watching a lot of Nickelodeon beyond maybe when I would have necessarily, or before I would have aged out of, I guess, their demographics. You know, I think every job that I've had leading up to my to the start of my writing career has been beneficial in that even in the reality space, you know, in development, you're still talking to network executives, figuring out what's trending, what people are looking for, learning how to pitch, how to write certain documents to get the project sold, and really what goes into that development process, why shows don't end up getting picked up from pilots, why maybe they get canceled after a first season, and you can really utilize that feedback and everything that you've learned to channel it into, you know, writing, which in the end, TV still works the same way, whether it's scripted or non-scripted.
So have you worked for the other side, the Disney side?
I have. I've written for Disney. I've written for Nickelodeon, DreamWorks, Apple, Warner Brothers, really everyone and anyone. And I think that's maybe something that's a little bit more unique about my writing background is the majority of what I've done has been in the freelance space. So I had been living in New York before recently moving to LA a few years ago. And so there's not that many writer's rooms in New York. There's not that many writing opportunities, at least in the kids space, besides a few companies. So oftentimes what I would do is come to LA, have meetings, really network, utilize LinkedIn, really anything and everything I could to continue to meet people in this space and, you know, do an episode or two at a time, show by show, you know, episode by episode, really proving my abilities and my skills as a writer. And then that work beget more work and so on and so on. And the one real positive thing is that I had the opportunity, or still do, to meet a ton of executives, a ton of different writers, really see what the models are for different shows, and again, really just kind of absorb all of that information and utilize what I think is successful and great about each company or about each show when I, you know, am running my writer team. Excuse me, when I'm writing my...
Come up with an alliteration listening to you. Absorb, adapt, adjust.
I think those are three great terms, and now I'll use them and make myself sound much smarter because...
Yeah, you can use them. Say that on this podcast, we came up with this alliteration because it seems to me that every, whether it's long form or short form, it has its structure, it has an infrastructure, it has a tone, it has an application process, and you learn through working in all of these mediums about how to adjust, absorb, and apply your skill set, correct?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, adapt is obviously a synonym of some of that, but I think that's a big thing too, specifically with the pandemic, but just in terms of the industry in general. I mean, I think as we see with Discovery and Warner Media merging, and what, 2 years before that, it was Warner and AT&T. So,
and before that, it was CBS and Verizon.
Yeah. And then CBS was with Viacom, then they broke up, then they got back together again. It's they're the Ross and Rachel of the
And is Warner media Brothers companies. Still with AT&T?
No, so they won't
they
be.
They broke up.
They broke up, yeah. And so Warner will be with Discovery. And so I think the landscape is always evolving and adapting, and you as a writer has to be able to evolve and adapt too. You know, streaming obviously is newer in the history of content. So while a lot of people have started to learn how to adapt to that, it's also changed really how shows are made. You know, now a lot of times, especially in kids animation, you might make 50 episodes all at once, but the release strategy is that those 50 episodes aren't going to come out all as one season. They might spread over 3 years or longer, you know, depending on what kind of the release strategy is from the streamer or the network. And so when you see a project in the trades, you're thinking, oh wow, they just wrapped the season one. I wanna go find out if there's a season two, or I just saw they announced it. I wanna see if I can be a part of that writing team. But in reality, they're set for the next 3 years already and before you even found out. So that's why it's important for those that are looking to continue on their journey or start their journey to utilize, you know, the trades, but know that that's not the end all be all, and really making those personal connections is so valuable so that you can learn about what's going on before it happens, because that's really what you want to do.
Yeah, it's not only being good on the page, it's being good at networking, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me as a head writer, you know, I always look at, do I get along with these people before I think about hiring them for an episode or for a season? Because in the end, you can be a great writer, but if you're not a team player, that's a very hard thing to do for a project or a show that really is a team sport. You know, when you write a feature, if you're going to go make it yourself, then you don't have to worry about notes from people. But if you're writing for a TV show, if you are writing a feature for a studio, right, you're not the only person that you have to satisfy. In TV, the EPs are still higher than the producers, but in film, the producers are higher than the EPs.
Right.
So yeah, it's always a little confusing, and oftentimes the hierarchy for live action television is interesting too, because, you know, oftentimes you will be an executive producer, but you're really a writer, you're part of the writing team. So there's co-EPs, EPs, supervising, there's a whole list of producer credits that are actually really writers. And I think that can also be confusing for the general population at times, as to knowing, especially if you are looking to get into the industry, what these specific titles mean for specific jobs. And so, I mean, one, researching is obviously one of the best things that you can do, but
And
talking to me, I suppose, as well. Yes. Or listening to this podcast. What I do as a head writer is I oversee all of the writers on the show that we're working on. And so it's my job to not only be the final voice in terms of the writing process. Yes, the intricacies and flow of the story, and really just especially in kids animation, a lot of shows don't have a writer's room. So you are the de facto writer for the network, essentially. You know, you're the one that's talking to the network in all the meetings, and then you're relaying the information to the writer and vice versa, where if writers have ideas, you're facilitating that to the network, and you're the conduit of all things writing. And so it's unique because you, for that season or for that show, are really the gatekeeper of the writing. And so for certain animated shows, right, you have freelance writers who come in and they do their episodes, but they really don't have the knowledge of what's going on. And if they're writing episode one and then episode seven, you know, they're getting the scripts to kind of follow along with what's going on, but they're not in the room day to day listening to why certain things didn't work or why certain things did work or why mandates have changed as the seasons progressed. So it's your job as the head writer to really be that Bible of information so that you're setting up the writer for as much success as possible. And then often, you know, doing, when you're doing your rewrites, keeping that in mind that the writer doesn't have all of that information at the ready because they're not in those meetings. So it's your job to kind of tweak and finesse in places where you have some more information than maybe they do before the network sees it. Because in the end, your job as the head writer, in my opinion, is to really make your writers look as great as possible, you know? And if you're a writer, your job is to make the head writer look as good as possible. So you want it to be as seamless of a transition. And then again, as the head writer, because you're touching every episode and every script, you know, you're kind of the last line of defense in terms of character voices and just the actions that the character, the actions that the characters will go through. So you want to be that person that's making sure that everything feels cohesive.
I have a question for you. Do you use the term showrunner?
Not as head writer. So those tend to be different. I think Marvel is doing it in a unique way in which they have, for their Disney Plus series, they'll have a head writer and they'll have a director that directs the entire season. So they don't have necessarily like a true showrunner like live action shows will have. Kids animation and kids content will have showrunners, but that's oftentimes different than a story editor. Sometimes they're the head writers as well, the showrunners, but there's oftentimes where the executive producer or showrunner will be different than the head writer or story editor.
And who is the network?
In terms of?
Well, you said, you know, you gave us the hierarchy, the pecking order of who has to answer to who. And then you said you have to answer to the network, right? As the representative of the writer's voice. Yeah. So who would the network be for you?
I mean, the network is whoever's producing the show, you know, whoever is, so whether that be Disney, whether that be Nickelodeon, whether that be DreamWorks, sometimes you have multiple networks, right? If it's a DreamWorks show that's produced for Netflix, you might get notes from DreamWorks executives and notes from Netflix executives. There was another show that I had worked on that had Apple as the distributor or the, you know, the network that's airing the show, but it was with a production company. So you're getting feedback from both sets of executives.
And have you worked with Mike Young, Splash?
I have not worked with Mike one-on-one, but I have met Mike many times. He's a great guy. We just haven't found the one project that we've been working on, but we've both been so busy. So that's
busy's good.
Yeah, that's been a positive, you know, silver lining of not being able to work together just yet.
Yeah, his silver lining is that his grandkids are playing soccer again. Because everybody had to stop sports during the pandemic.
Oh, that's good.
I adore him and I got to do a podcast with him, but I've known him since I was like going in the room and pitching to him like 15 years ago.
And his son Pete's really great too.
So. And I'm working with Pete right now. Oh, cool. One of my clients just put down a demo for voiceover for a series they're doing.
Oh, that's awesome. The main part for animation is that you do want to keep the characters moving and pretty active at all times. It's a very visual medium. You know, there needs to be a reason why the show is animated versus being live action. Right? Live action, you can get away with telling a whole episode or a scene with two actors at a table, very Seinfeld-esque, and that's not something that you would look to do in animation. So I think people that make the pivot from maybe live action to animation, or people that are writing primarily in live action and want to get into animation, should know that if you are looking to do animation, then you really do want the characters to always be moving. And if there is a scene where you're trying to get some exposition out, is there a funny way that you can do it without them just standing around or sitting or just like walking and talking? You know, how can you make that scene equally visually pleasing while still getting this information that seemingly would be a little bit more boring out?
Can you give me an example of that? That's really great insight. without giving away anything copywritten, I...
Oh, yeah, totally. So, I mean, I think, you know, if you were writing an episode of Seinfeld, right, you can have them at the coffee shop and really just kind of going back and forth with dialogue about what's being set up or what needs to happen for the episode to continue. Whereas maybe if you're doing an episode of animation where the kids are, or the characters maybe, let's say, are cleaning something up, you know, you can get a lot of that exposition through action. Maybe the character steps on a roller skate and is kind of explaining what's going on as they're trying to keep their balance from falling, or
That's fantastic.
Something like that, you know, just to keep it engaging and exciting, and oftentimes comical while still getting the information out.
All right, so switching gears, have you done anything for Adult Swim?
For Adult Swim, no.
No?
Yeah.
Okay, and have you done any adult animation?
I haven't done any animation for that demo. Okay. I've done some live action stuff for the demo, for the older demo, but not animation.
So what are you working on now that you can talk about?
That's a good question. Let's see.
You probably have a whole library of NDAs, is my guess.
Yeah. I mean, one of the upcoming projects that I have been working on is a show called The Twisted Timeline of Sammy and Raj, which was for which is for Nickelodeon. So that should be coming out hopefully later this year, early 2022, depending. And so that was a show that I was the head writer on for, you know, the first season. And so, you know, that's been a really fun show to be a part of. And I've loved every minute of you know, getting to be the head writer for that.
A question for you. So you're very young, and my question is, are other writers in the room generally your age, or do you find that there's a range of younger and older writers that you're supervising?
It can depend. I mean, in terms of the makeup of a writer's room or just the writing team, if it is a bunch of freelancers, I really try as the head writer to find a diverse group of writers, both in race and age and everything in between, to get as many perspectives as possible, because I think as we try to continue to develop interesting characters for the demo, you know, we really just want to make sure that we're making sure that everybody's included, both in representation on screen and in the creative field as well.
Yeah, I've noticed there, certainly with Disney, that they've invested in developing a lot more gay storylines. It's certainly in live action, introducing many more mixed race families. Of course, I worked on a show called Lab Rats. My client, you know, was a series regular, so I was very involved with how they were developing that in the writer's room. I wonder, in animation, do you take in the same consideration?
Yeah, we do. I mean, you know, diverse representation, LGBT representation, it's all things that we really take to heart and things that we really look to strive to include, again, both on screen and off screen. So for Sammy and Raj, it is two cousins from an Indian American family. And so we wanted to make sure that the creative team also represented the family that we were portraying on screen. And so that was something that, you know, I and Nickelodeon really took to heart, to ensure that we had the proper representation in terms of writers who had backgrounds from Southeast Asia, as well as, you know, the creative team and the producing team. It worked hand in hand with Viacom 18, which is Nickelodeon's division in Mumbai. Yeah, I can't speak too much about how much is being done in other countries because I just don't really know, but I do know that international animation in general has really exploded over the years. I mean, I just saw an article about a cool new show that's coming out of Cartoon Network Africa, right? And I think the international market has grown dramatically. One of the shows that I wrote on is a show called Gigantosaurus, which airs on Disney, but it was produced and originally conceived by a company called Cyber Group Studios in France. So that's oftentimes you'll see a lot of these co-productions as well between international production companies and networks or studios here in the US.
Yeah, I have colleagues at Gaumont, and that's a big French company, and they seem to be very big in animation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's great that there's more voices, more people that are able to tell stories and finding, you know, I think that's the way that we keep it unique and fresh and really diversify the types of stories that we're telling audiences, because that's really what people want to see.
So every day now that you go to work, are you right where you are?
Yes, this is my... But, you know, for me...
You're not in Burbank anymore.
Yeah, well, for me, most of my writing career has been at home. As a freelancer, you might go in for meetings, you might go in for story summits, which are kind of these 2-3 day all-day meetings where you're really talking about the show, getting an overview or giving an overview depending on what your position on the project is, talking about some of the upcoming episodes with writers, or if you are a writer, kind of getting your marching orders for what you're going to go and do. But as a freelancer, you tend to work a lot out of your house. And so when it comes to the pandemic, that was something that I naturally was able to continue doing, thankfully. And, you know, I think for others, it was obviously an adjustment if you go into the office every day and now you're working from home. You know, my wife was used to going to the office or being on set, and then, you know, her company went to work from home as everybody did. And so that was a unique experience for her that, you know, I was more used to. But when it comes to being creative from home, you know, I think it just takes, let me think of how I want to say this. Sometimes my mouth moves faster than my brain thinks, and which is why I like typing. I think working from home is a unique experience. I certainly am looking forward to being able to go back into the office as needed. I mean, I always love working from home and the flexibility that it offers, but I think it's also really nice in a creative field to have the opportunity to be in the room with people, to share ideas, to bounce things off of people. You know, as great as technology and Zoom is, I think there are some limitations at times. You know, people getting cut off or their mics being muted because everybody's kind of talking over each other. I think there's also those really nice opportunities to bond when you do break for 5-10 minutes to grab some coffee from the break room or to eat lunch. And if you're stuck on an idea that, you know, is just not working in the room, sometimes talking about anything but is what gives you that spark. And when you're on Zoom and you break for lunch, you know, you end the meeting and you go to your kitchen. And you just are a little bit more isolated in that regard. So you don't have that kind of connectivity that maybe one would need for coming up with that aha moment. But at the same time, you know, I know one of the things you mentioned in your questionnaire was about being productive from home and during the pandemic. And, you know, I think it's a really interesting topic.
what did you go to school for? How did that help you? And how did it not help you in your current career?
Sure. And one thing before I jump into that, I would be remiss to say that when it comes to the pandemic, obviously people are still suffering and struggling, especially, at this current time, in India, which we have so many friends and coworkers that have been working on our projects. So I would just say that if you have the means, to consider donating to a number of different great charities and organizations that are helping with getting vaccines out or oxygen to those that are struggling in India at this time. And then I'll jump to your other question, which, can you repeat it? Sorry, one more time.
Well, just in terms of your education, did you go to school to become a writer?
So I went to college at Indiana University, specifically for film and television production. But actually, for film and television production, and I learned a lot of great things, but actually what helped me break into the industry was my music career. But I was in a punk band in high school and college. It was a band called Rushmore. And we had a record deal for a short time, very briefly. We opened up for Justin Bieber. We played the Vans Warped Tour. We played with the Plain White Tees when that song, Hey There Delilah, was like the number one song in the country. Hey there, Delilah, da, yeah. Well, you can't sing it too long, or else we're going to have to license the song.
Right, we'll have to cut it off, yeah.
Yeah, pay them a royalty. But it was through the bands that I think I really, and this is what I think is really cool for those that are looking to get into a new career, get into the entertainment industry, whether you're just starting out or looking to pivot, is that, like I said, with the reality TV, everything that you do has transferable skills and will help you build on what you're looking to do. You just need to know how to utilize that properly. And so when I was playing in the band, right, we're freshmen in high school all the way through seniors in college. But through that time, I learned what it meant to be working in a business, you know, cold calling, talent bookers and venues to try and get the band on the show, negotiating rates for studio time, working with others and your bandmates specifically when you're going on tour, or writing songs, how to be kind of a peace negotiator, how to know when to step up and fight for what you think is the best direction for something. And so all of these skills are really transferable when you're a writer, because you have to be brave enough to sometimes go out on a limb and talk to network executives or reach out to agents or reach out to other writers in order to find work. You have to know when to stand up and shout from the rooftops that you think you're right on a certain idea, and when to concede and realize that, you know, your idea isn't as strong as somebody else's. And it's just kind of that hustle and that grit that I built, at least through being a part of the band and being almost like a de facto manager, in addition to being a performer, that I found to be very helpful as I navigated the television industry, because just like music is a business, you know, entertainment is a business as well. And I think as much as everybody wants to be an artist, I think those that are the most successful also do realize that there is a business acumen that one must have to be successful.
Very cool. And so do you still play music with your band?
I don't still play music with my band. But I do use music oftentimes in what I do. So one of my favorite projects that I've had the opportunity to work on was I wrote the live stage show for Sesame Street. It's called Sesame Street. Sesame Street Live, Make Your Magic. And it has played over 300 shows across the country. It played at Madison Square Garden, which was cool to go see. And so it was a live stage spectacular, if you will. But you're utilizing, you know, writing and story, but also music and writing parody songs or original songs in addition to the library of great songs that, that Sesame Street has. So, and even in various shows that I've written on have, you know, opportunities for songs and getting to work with the songwriters or the musical directors. And getting to have my input on certain things like that has just been a fun full circle effect. And it was through the band that I started to make some connections with MTV because we were nominated for an MTV VMA in 2009 for Best Breakout Artist. And
wow.
So that in part was how I landed my first internship at MTV. So, utilizing the skills that you have to be able to parlay it into something that you want, I think is a really great skill set for anybody. And like I had mentioned, with if you are looking to break into writing and you do have a particular skill set, you were in the Army, you were, went to law school, you were a medical student, right? Being able to use that expertise to then prove to a show why you're the right person for their project.
Is there anything you would say to your 18-year-old self now? Words of wisdom.
Yeah, I would say if I was talking to my 18-year-old self, I think I would probably tell them not to try and hit a home run right when you're up at bat. And, you know, it's okay to take kind of those step by steps and the chunks by chunks as they come, and that you're not going to just wake up one day. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and be at the end of the road. And that you really should enjoy like the little things that build up and build up and build up as you continue your journey.
Yeah, the process is everything, isn't it?
It is. And I think that's something that, you know, when you're young and you're hungry and you want to prove yourself, that's something that, you know, you want to go straight to the top as soon as possible. And there is a lot of value to be had, you know, learning and growing.